A very good morning to media commentator Andrew Holden.
Good morning.
Now, I wasn't aware of internal affairs and the media regulations being reviewed, but they're being reviewed.
They
what does the review say?
They
What's
are,
internal
well,
affairs role apart from anything else?
Yes.
It's
we
kind
don't
of that
know.
Department of places that don't have another place to be in many ways, internal affairs.
That's very unfair.
No, it's not unfair.
Affairs,
there's some really, really good work happening within
there,
it.
There is indeed. So this is a fascinating one. I was going to start by saying we are living in a quite extraordinary period for media in this country with so many different announcements going on. But this is a really interesting one. So they've advised that they're going to launch a fresh review of New Zealand's media content regulatory system. This has been battled with many times. And essentially what they're saying is the current regime is old. It's not really fit for purpose. It's based upon the analogue sense of there's a there's nightly news at 6 o'clock, and then there's Radio New Zealand, and newspapers are publishing this, and therefore it's all in a nice, coherent way. Whereas, as we know now, it can be content can be in a million different places, YouTube, highly significant, let alone social media. So they've basically said we think it's time to review what's going on, the various acts and the way it's done, and try and pull this into a cohesive whole. That, of course, will trigger a lot of, you could say alarm bells, but a lot of interest, because a good chunk of the media are self-regulated, particularly if you think of organisations like NZME and Stuff, in that they have a press council. They help fund that. It can criticise them, but there's no penalties or imposition, whereas the Broadcasting Act and some of those are a lot stronger. So what does this mean? Are they going to try and encompass all the kind of news content and where it might be published? And does the intent of that mean that organisations outside that regime might be brought inside it? I think it's going to trigger a huge amount of debate.
I'm just reading a quote. This was on Newsroom, a quote of Michael Woodside from Internal Affairs saying, "Our existing regulatory system addresses harm in a shrinking proportion of the media content consumed and provides little protection at all for digital media types, which pose the greatest risk for harmful content." It's a statement of fact.
It is.
But
and you
what,
can absolutely,
and the question worldwide is, what can you do about it?
Yeah, very much so. And you absolutely get the point that sits behind it, and the fact that because of the Broadcasting Act, they were able to say the video from the Christchurch terror attack, that's offensive, therefore you can't publish it. So they were able to use what existed for a specific purpose. But there'll be any amount of other stuff that's published that can't be controlled, if you like. So it'll be fascinating to see as they push into this, what would they propose to do to try and control the kind of media that you might find on Facebook or wherever? What possible control could they have on it, and therefore what might that mean for media organisations here?
It looks like it's been a long-running issue going back over
a
decade,
yes,
as various ministers in different roles have kind of grappled with it, and here we are, still without any kind of actual proposed legislative change.
No, that's right. And let's face it, this is going to be quite a fraught one. And one of the fascinating pieces in that, and again from the same Newsroom story, is there's clearly a bit of wrestling going on as to which government department will lead this review. Is it Internal Affairs? Is it Culture and Heritage, because they look after broadcasting? Might it potentially go to Law Commission, for example? Or, where might this sit?
The Office of Film and Literature Classification is the other place, isn't it? We're talking about the
Indeed.
Chief Censor. The Chief Censor has endeavoured to do and to fill this gap on various occasions, coming in using his legislation. But it's broader than just the extreme examples, isn't it?
Well, you would think so. And I think that will be the really interesting debate within it, is how much can you trust, if you like, existing media organisations to show a little bit of response to community and a little bit of responsibility, and that's essentially what the press councils are
kind of
around,
the
media council.
That's kind of the point. That's the difference between radio and online digital, but, old media organisations.
Indeed.
And what's happening on social. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, we won't hold our breath probably for that to report or to change.
That will be. But can I just say, though, I mean, really important context for them to tackle this, because if we are talking about the creation of a public media, convergence of RNZ and TVNZ, moving into whole different strands of where they might publish information, then arguably you do need a regulatory system that works across that.
The question is those outside of that existing kind of mainstream, to use the word, and that'll no doubt trip the review up for ages.
Yeah, absolutely.
New Zealand On Air has released some more details of this $55 million fund and how it will be spent. This is the Public Interest Journalism Fund.
Yeah, A really good piece that I'm relying on here in the spin-off in terms of looking at this. And to my fault, I hadn't quite necessarily understood the potential impact. So this came out last week. They got Hal Crawford, former head of Media Works, to have a look at this. So this is going back to February. Broadcasting and Media Minister Chris Farfoy announces a $55 million journalism fund called the Public Interest Journalism Fund, and the intention being some direct government money that can support the nature of journalism within the country, as we've seen so many people laid off around it. So essentially, thanks to Crawford's review, what New Zealand On Air is saying is we're going to spread this money, and so $55 million over 3 years, that's $10 million for what's left of this financial year, $25 million for next year, and then another $20 million for 3 years. So basically, the three pillars are project funding. You come up with a really good idea of a project. It might be a collaboration between Radio New Zealand and Stuff, and yes, we can give you some funding to help pay for that. Role funding, and I'm going to come back to that in a second because this is the biggie. And then some industry development funding, that's kind of cross-industry cadetships, upskilling initiatives. But the really interesting element is that role funding, because what in essence Crawford is saying is that as a minimum 100 reporters should be hired under that pillar for the next 3 years. So if you think of 100 reporters hired, and you think of the three big media organisations outside the public fund, i.e. yourselves and TVNZ, you could be looking at 60 new journalists for the likes of Stuff, New Zealand Herald, TV3 potentially, and then all the smaller outfits start to put up their hand as well. So that's if we're talking about 100 new journalists on the streets as of, let's say, by the end of this year, by the time you do recruitment, and they're hired for another 2 years, that's a big chunk of people on the streets chasing news stories and publishing it. That's a pretty big boost.
Well, it is, except what were the numbers we had over the hundreds that we'd lost?
In truth.
Per annum?
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
That blew my mind. I didn't know we had that many to start with. There's been an absolute, hollowing out of the actual practicing journalism workforce in this country. So it sounds like a lot, and I suppose by today's standards it's a lot, but are today's standards what we want?
Oh, well, I think let's face it, when you're looking at those circumstances, the number of people who've left the industry, any return of people back into it is great, even if it's coming from the public purse. There's a couple of fish hooks here, obviously. One is that the funding's for 3 years, so essentially you're saying to somebody, I've got a job for you, but by the way, it may
it's
well
quite
run
a long
out.
Time, actually. Quite a long time. That's very
And let's face it, right? If you're a young journalist, relatively recently out of journalism college, you're going to take,
Although,
2 years.
Interestingly,
contract.
I don't know that's always what they're looking for. And I think that's an issue sometimes, is they are actually looking for more experienced journalists for some of these roles and not just have let's give a break to the brand new kid on the block. They have a vital role in injecting energy and perspective. But, some of these gigs, I think they're looking for people who can, have got a...
Oh, that's right. They've got the background and know how to do it. I mean, the other, curious element in this is they're basically saying, RNZ, you can't buy into this. That would be double dipping to have your own government funding and get into this, and ditto TVNZ. So, in essence, it's saying to anybody who's not currently got government funding, put your applications in. They close on May 14. So there'll a lot of scrambling around for coming up with great ideas.
Now, Prince Philip's death happened, I think, Friday night, was announced New Zealand time. Automatically going to affect the schedules. What happened in the UK, though, when they cleared their Friday night schedules? Everyone said no thanks.
And my confession or my declaration of interest, I'm an Australian Republican, so you can reasonably assume that I'm going to be delighted by this particular thing. So in essence, what the BBC did, and they've been criticised in the past for not taking the royal family seriously, so they basically cleared their schedules on Friday night from BBC One, BBC Two. That meant the likes of EastEnders, Gardeners' World, the final of MasterChef, shift gone for 24 hours and rolled out a whole lot of pre-recorded tributes from the Duke of Edinburgh's children. What it meant for BBC One, they dropped 6% on the previous week. BBC Two was disastrous. Two-thirds of their audiences were absolutely not interested in this whatsoever. That's why we come to BBC Two. So they turned off. And, I mean, they did some quite extraordinary things. They took BBC Four completely off the air. And on the children's channel, the children were greeted with a banner encouraging them to go and watch the news find out. So
there is something called kind of, you know, evolution. Like, yes, we're talking the spouse of the head of state and it's big news, but there's a middle ground to be found.
There is a middle ground. I mean, I think we can reasonably expect when the Queen passes that they'll do the same. But
sure. All right. Thanks very much, Andrew Holden, media commentator.